All right, I've been looking forward to this conversation since I scheduled it yesterday. The commentary back to me this week has been, you're not a real conservative. You're a rhino, blah, blah, blah. And I always tell people, I look at how I vote, and I can probably mostly align myself with a conservative. It doesn't mean I agree with everything. And I certainly don't agree with Donald Trump and a lot of things. But I thought, let's go to what is a voice that most people, most sane, rational people, smart people, agree is one of the most conservative voices in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. And he joins us on our hotline, Rick Esterberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I am good. So I'm thinking about this today, and I've had a lot of back and forth with my listeners and audience in the last couple of weeks. And I'm looking at the issue of what Trump is trying to accomplish by his executive actions or orders, the shutting down of the U.S. AID office, TikTok, that whole controversy. It was banned, and Congress said it should be banned, but that's brought back. Birthright citizenship, tariffs. And I read a piece by you, and this I'm going to read it directly, and I welcome your comments. This is from you, direct quote: "The president cannot just impose tariffs or taxes. Congress cannot delegate that authority, nor can the president just eliminate federal programs enacted by Congress, no matter how stupid they are," which I agree with that. "When he does, conservative legislators, lawyers, and the media need to object." Explain, Rick, what you're talking about, what I'm trying to tell people as well.
Right. Well, of course, it's all more complicated than, you can express in a post on X. But, for a long time now, I think one of the leading issues for constitutional conservatives has been to oppose executive overreach. That is, we believe in the separation of powers and the role of each branch of government must be kept as distinct as it can be. Now, there's always going to be overlap, right? So, nothing is ever going to be perfect. But what we don't want to have is a situation where when Biden is president, conservatives are rigorously enforcing their view of separation of powers. And my organization sued the Biden administration 12 times.
Mm-hmm.
But when our guy is in there, we decide that it's okay for the president to do whatever he wants. So that's the general sentiment that I was trying to express. Now, when you apply that to all the things that happened in the last couple of weeks, you're going to get different answers depending upon the circumstance. Sometimes you're going to conclude that what Trump did is okay. He's got the authority to do it. Sometimes it looks like he doesn't. And sometimes it's hard to tell. Because if all you're doing is reading accounts in the news, they often are not sufficiently detailed to tell you or let you conclude whether there's really a problem or not. You need more information. And sometimes they need to play themselves out.
So if I'm looking at the list, and I gave you a couple of examples, something like tariffs or taxes, that's not really the role of the president. Or am I wrong on that?
Well, so we'd have an argument over that in the sense that Congress has for a long time enacted laws which, at least under certain circumstances, delegate their authority for the setting of tariffs to the president. My view is, and although there have been a couple cases upholding that delegation, my view is that it's unconstitutional. The Congress says, the Constitution gives Congress the power to set tariffs. And just as we would instinctively recoil at a law which says that, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to give the president the authority to just, set whatever tax code he wants and set whatever rate he wants, and that's all going to be fine and dandy. We should have the same reluctance with tariffs, because tariffs are essentially a tax, and tariffs are a thing that if you get out your Constitution and read it, are reserved to the domain of the Congress.
Do you think conservative media, we have stations here in Wisconsin that certainly provide that, and across the country, they're very popular, they do very well. Do you think they understand that difference that you're laying out?
Well, I mean, I think some of them do. For example, if you want an intelligent discussion of these issues, go to the National Review website. You'll find it there. You'll find it at the Dispatch. You'll find it in the Wall Street Journal. You know, there are some media outlets which are more cheerleaders for the administration, and you may not find an adequate conversation. But my point is, look, this is something that we as conservatives believed in for have believed in now for 40, 50 years. That's not uniform. But the separation of powers and the rule of law and limited government have been a very, very big thing for us. And I know that because I've been embedded in the conservative legal movement for about 20 years now. And I'm not giving that up because there's a Republican that was elected president.
I think they call that street cred, Rick. I got to take a quick break here. I want to get to some other things, including a great question about Elon Musk and what he's been doing as far as his office of the DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. Rick Esselberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We'll continue that conversation right here on 620 WTMJ after this. Getting back to my conversation with Rick Esselberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. A quick one, then when I get to the Musk question, that a texter actually had a great question for you, Rick. Birthright citizenship, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this. Sort of spelled out in the 14th Amendment, one of the sections. The president has now said he wants to get rid of that. Is that an overreach, an example of the president going too far?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, first of all, the argument that the 14th Amendment should not guarantee citizenship to persons who are born in the United States to parents who are here unlawfully is not a crazy argument. You can make that case. That case would be inconsistent, not with the facts of an old 1898 Supreme Court case, but with its reasoning. If you take its reasoning and you apply this, then there probably should be birthright citizenship. And so an executive order is not supposed to declare the law because the president doesn't have that authority. It's the judiciary that resolves disputes about what the law means. Executive orders are supposed to be used to implement authority as the president has. Now, I think what he could have done is he could have said, okay, what we're going to do is if there's some federal programs that are only limited to citizens, we're not going to recognize as citizens persons who are born to parents who are here unlawfully, and then that sets up litigation. And at that point, what the government would have to do is they would have to go in and they would have to say that, yeah, there's this old 1898 case, Wong Kim Ark. Probably we're asking you to overturn it or to modify it. I mean, honest about these things. We've done that at will. We filed lawsuits and we said, look, we know that there's a Supreme Court precedent that is against this, but we think it's wrong. And then you litigate that case all the way up. You're not going to win it until you get to the Supreme Court, if you do. But, you know, there's a long history of cases in which, you know, that's happened, including, quite frankly, Brown versus Board of Education, where somebody said, look, we want the law to be changed. But that's the way to do it. But in the executive order, it says that this is now the law of the land. Is meaningless because the president doesn't have the authority to declare what the law of the land is as a general matter.
Rick Esselberg joining us on the Political Power Hour on 620 WTMJ. I've been very critical of Elon Musk, not the idea of looking at government's waste and excess, because I've said since I've ever had a radio show, every year that every expenditure we make as a government should be looked at and analyzed and determined if it's actually needed anymore, or certainly have to be paid attention to when we're talking about exploding federal deficits. That's one thing. Texter asks a great question. I'm just going to read it to you and you can respond. Could the unprecedented inside access to internal federal economic data and other non-public info by Elon Musk and other people related to President Trump be considered SEC violations if they use that, this is the kind of the trigger here, to benefit their own businesses?
Well, I mean, that's a complicated question. It depends what they do. But certainly, you know, there is this issue of, for example, insider trading, where somebody has certain types of non-public information and they use that basically to play the market and gain a profit. We hear a lot about that with respect to members of Congress. And, you know, that would apply here, too. I'm not as I wouldn't say I agree with you know everything that comes out of Elon Musk's mouth, but I would want to direct it away from the person of Elon Musk. It certainly isn't unprecedented for presidents to have temporary or part-time employees. Apparently, I guess that's Musk's status now.
Right.
In some ways, I have to say, just to say something provocative, because I know you like that. I think that early weeks of the Trump administration reminding me a lot of FDR, because FDR had this brain trust. He had these dollar a year men who would come in and he would rely on their advice, and he wanted to move fast and break things. Right, he talked about bold experimentation. Kamala Harris borrowed that term in her election campaign. Conservatives, I think, quite rightly criticize that. I don't think it's the job of the government to be engaged regularly in bold experimentation. But in some ways, that's what Trump is doing, too. And as I said before, sometimes he does it lawfully. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes it's good ideas. Sometimes it's bad ideas. I think the tariffs are a horrible idea. But I think there's a parallel to be drawn between Trump and FDR. But I want to be clear. I don't think it's a good parallel. I don't think that that's something that I want, or that as a general matter, conservatives have not wanted their government to be doing. They have traditionally wanted more limited government.
Real quick, because I only got about a minute left, less than a minute, actually. Did the immunity decision by the U.S. Supreme Court sort of embolden President Trump to be able to just at least have the hubris to say, I'm going to do these things whether you like it or not? Do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure I would agree with that, because I don't think that presidents have generally acted because they fear criminal liability. And you have to keep in mind that, a president can do all sorts of things. FDR did all sorts of things. And but even if they have immunity from criminal liability for the way in which they do their job, they are not immune, and the government is not immune from civil the question of constitutionality of this stuff. And so a bigger constraint on presidents has I think always been, is this a position that I can defend in court and get away with in some ways? And I will see what happens as all of this plays itself out.
There will be lawyers. Always appreciate your wisdom, my friend. Be well. We'll talk again down the road.
All right. Take care, Steve.